We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Day for the Arsenal boys as Martinelli stars and Xhaka shows that maybe his superpower is just making people really, really angry. This is the Arsenal Vision World Cup Daily. My name is Elliot Smith, the Blackman Twitter, Yankee Gunner. Another sensational day of World Cup football, a World Cup that has brought the drama. It's just crazy because each day you're like, oh, this is wild. There's so much happening. It's all kicking off. It's all going on. And then the next day it just does it again. Now, whether or not it'll be able to duplicate that in the round of 16 remains to be seen. But our final day of the group stages left us with plenty to enjoy. And I just want to say thanks for everyone who's been going on this journey with us. And I know that all of us are having a different World Cup experience, especially depending on the time of day it's going on. Maybe you're able to see every minute of every game, dual screens, everything up. Maybe you're glancing at it at work. Maybe you're waking up to find out the results. But I hope that we've been able to at least keep you a little bit engaged with it. And I think we kind of have the right rapport going on, at least when I'm on the pod, not so much when Paul or Tim are on the pod, because you get the knowledgeable, in-depth explanation of what happened with Phil. And then you get the bumbling idiot who watched out of the corner of his eye while doing seven different things, pretending to have understood what happened in the games. Having said that, I did get a pretty good look at the games today, and I feel prepared to go toe-to-toe with Phil on his knowledge of the games. And here to prove me wrong is Phil Costa. You can find him on Twitter at @_PhilCosta. Hello, Phil Costa.
Hello, Elliot. What an intro. I feel like you're spoiling me here. You've already talked me up in the last few weeks, so that's going straight on the resume.
Much like you can look taller by standing next to me, you can sound more intelligent by podcasting next to me. So these things are all tied together. Speaking of standing, I am currently standing just to get my energy flowing, get my blood flowing. I've been sitting too long, so we've taken the Starship to standing position. We're ready to go. If anybody wants to be the standing desk sponsor of the Arsenal Vision World Cup Daily, please feel free to get in touch. I do want to say that over on the Patreon side, we'll have AVP clips. It's sort of our musings on individual issues. Paul's got one coming. Clive's got one coming. We haven't really been hearing from Clive a lot lately, so I'm sure he's got a lot of thoughts to get out. And I, for one, am excited to hear them. So we'll have that coming up soon. So let's do this. Let's take it chronologically because it was all exciting. And the early games of the day were Group H. We had Portugal against South Korea and Ghana against Uruguay. And I think I don't want to say presumption, but I think the thought was that Ghana-Uruguay would wind up being the play-in game. South Korea and Portugal, you know, might be interesting, but would not be. And Ricardo Horta scoring in the fifth minute did nothing to change our impression of how this group was going to shake out. So at that point, Phil, you're thinking, surely now it's Uruguay with everything to play for. And after getting a brace in the 26th and 32nd minute, it looked like it was all set. Here we go. Uruguay and Portugal through.
I mean, it definitely looked that way. Obviously, Portugal did the thing that all the other teams that have qualified did. They made five changes. Yeah. They kind of gave, you know, some important legs a rest, some fresh legs a go. And, you know, it was a chance to see some people that they wouldn't have seen yet. So I thought, look, even with a few changes to the side, I thought Portugal would have had enough just to edge South Korea, to be honest. I think they were missing, Kim Min-jae as well, who's like their star center back. So, you know, for me, this is what you said, Ghana, Uruguay was the one that was going to decide second place here. And credit to South Korea, they shocked us all, as is, you know, the running theme of this group stage and this World Cup so far.
And this is the thing. Karma is a you-know-what. Like, this is a real thing. What goes around comes around. Uruguay approached football up until this game like the goal of it was to bore people senseless. That was their raison d'etre, was to make us all hate football. And I think it's only right that they go out, and we'll get to how they go out, that they go out on goals scored, because they didn't attempt to score goals until this game. But it set up a really interesting situation. So Portugal's leading, Uruguay's leading, and at that point, it's all looking good. If you're Uruguay, and poor Ghana, right? They get a penalty early, and let's talk about it. I mean, it's not well struck, is it?
It's not at all. And
The run-up didn't inspire confidence.
He didn't look confident at all. I mean, what did you actually make of the decision first? Did you think it was a penalty?
This is the one where he went over the goalkeeper, right?
Yeah, the Kudus one.
There have been so many calls and so many things happening. Is this the one that they ruled out for offside, but then it wasn't offside? Yeah. And then he goes, I mean, I think it's a penalty because, and I'll tell you why, even if you're like, I'm not sure there was contact or the ball was gone, like if I slide in front of you such that you can't get to where you want, like if I give you the choice to either like be tripped by me or not be tripped by me and not be able to get to the ball, you've sort of impeded me anyway. You kind of fouled me. So I don't know. That's a situation where I think the player has the right to go over the keeper, and I don't have a problem with it being a penalty. Do you?
Yeah, no, I don't have a problem with it. I mean, it is a foul. But it's just one of those ones where I think like the attacker initiates a lot of the contact. And for me, those ones are annoying because I feel like you pay the ultimate price for a kind of potentially clumsy one, but one that's also been initiated by the striker. I mean, too often we've seen them and it's clever play. And it is, I think Kudus, you know, he obviously wins the ball, just tries to get a touch on it and it's a foul. But it's just the kind of personal thing that I have where I feel like the punishment doesn't fit the crime in that kind of sense.
Oh, I mean, most penalties, the punishment doesn't. If you want to have a conversation, Phil, let's have a conversation. Mm-hmm. We need to start a conversation. I mean, and this coming from the guy who just the other day just tried to defend Thierry Henry and the greatest footballing crime ever committed. But like most penalties are giving the team way too big an advantage for way too minor an infraction. Mm-hmm. Like if I have a nibble at your ankle in the corner of the box when you're facing your own goal, should it be a penalty? Should you have the chance to take an 80% opportunity to get a goal for that? No. So I get what you're saying. The punishment,
I mean, it's a
fit.
Penalty. It's a penalty.
It's the culture of football too, right? If a keeper comes out and doesn't get the ball and the player goes over the keeper, it's always a penalty, whether it should be or not. That's sort of the culture of football.
Yeah. I mean, it is a penalty. I just thought in the moment, it was just a bit like, is that how I want this game to go? I mean, just thoroughly, you know, purely through my lens.
Well, it didn't go, did it?
Well, it didn't. And like you said, the run-up was not convincing. And there was no conviction in the strike. I mean, we've seen a lot of penalty run-ups and penalties, you know, different techniques with Bruno Fernandes and Jorginho and, you know, the little stop and stutter, but this was kind of neither. You know, there was no conviction in the run-up, no conviction in the strike, and the goalie, obviously, he has to guess the right way, but even if you strike a penalty well and into the corner, the chances that the goalie's going to save it is not very high. But there was just so middle of everything, you know, and it's quite amazing, you know, that Ghana... they're just unable to banish those ghosts. You know, they're just unable to banish that terrible day for them. I mean, it was their greatest heartbreak, and they just couldn't put it past them. And you thought from that moment, it's not going to be their day, is it? And then very quickly afterwards, we saw the two goals for Uruguay.
Yeah. Well, so Uruguay did start to play with real intention. What do you make of the goals? Why don't you walk me through their goals? Because I have to be honest, like I was sort of shifting back and forth, trying to keep an eye on both of these games. And I feel like until the second half, I missed all the good stuff was happening while my eyes were on the other screen. So what do you make of the Uruguay goals?
I think the important note is that they finally started De Arrascaeta, you know, because he'd not been featuring so much. And there was a lot of clamor for him, not just in Uruguay, but in Brazil, because he'd been one of the best players in Brazil for the last two or three seasons now. And he's someone that can make an attacking difference for Uruguay because they finally had someone playing between the lines, you know, as opposed to two banks of four and then two isolated strikers 50 yards away, you know? So they had someone who was able to just float around, be another link in there. And you could see their attacking play was instantly better. Even Suarez, you know, he was able to sort of bounce off someone, and it made a huge deal of difference to him because in the last two games, he'd looked like he just demolished a KFC bargain bucket before he played. And now he's, you know, and now he was running around. I mean, obviously that was a lot of probably adrenaline fueled, but I just think the inclusion of De Arrascaeta was a huge thing. And obviously who pops up with the two goals, two strikers finish, you know, and he's there to score the goals. So I have to give the credit to the manager for that particular decision, because I think too long throughout this tournament, there was just an air of conservatism and almost buying into the feeling that Uruguay have to be this ultra defensive team, the rough team that are going to battle for the draw and give you a kick when the referee's not looking. I thought he bought into that a little bit too much when they actually have some players who can play.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, towards the end, it all goes crazy because against the script and very, very much against the script, Portugal concede not once, but twice. And suddenly now we have a scenario. Well, let's get to the once, right? So 27 minutes, it's 1-1. At that point, so it goes into halftime. Let's go into halftime, right? You're in the halftime.
It's a lovely assist. It's a lovely assist from Ronaldo for their goal as well. Lovely ducking away from the ball, ducking away off the back. Yeah, yeah, yeah. This team is already moving past him, and it's kind of sad to watch.
Well, I mean, the funny thing is they can't move past him, which is the problem. They probably have a better chance this tournament if they did, but kind of like a Manchester United situation. So let's go into halftime dressing rooms. It's 1-1 in the Korea-Portugal game. And it's 2-0 in the Uruguay game. Mm-hmm. At that point, Uruguay are still safe, right? They're through. They're on four. Korea are on two, right? Yep, two.
No, they were on one. They started on one.
Right, but they at halftime.
Yes, at halftime.
Right, they're on two, and Uruguay are on four. But they surely have to know at that point that there's a chance that if Korea get another goal, they're going out on goals scored.
Yeah.
And I think they might have, because in the second half, Phil, Uruguay just absolutely battered the shit out of Ghana. Like, I mean, there was a lot of goal mouth action. There was a lot of efforts to create goals. And it led to, I think, one of my favorite things that's happened in football, which is 800 shots of Luis Suarez crying, scared, dreading the possible outcome, not knowing what to think. And sure enough, 90 plus one, we get the goal. Mm-hmm. We get the goal from South Korea. What do you make of it?
It's a brilliant goal. To be honest, watching the game today, I felt this was arguably South Korea's worst performance, you know? They surrendered possession far too easily, which isn't even their game. They like to be on the ball and proactive, and they just decided to surrender. Maybe it was just a kind of press button, you know, red button for emergencies kind of thing. But even when they did have the ball, they lost it too quickly. They couldn't capitalize on any counterattacks. They didn't really create anything at all. And then Portugal get a corner in injury time. And Son, he was having another awful game. I mean, it was hero ball, but in the worst possible way. Selfish, you know, play, running into traffic. It was just a really bad game, capping off a bad tournament for him. And all of a sudden, you saw the quality there. He ran away from two, three players. waited for Huang, played a beautiful ball through the legs of, I can't remember convinced. Which defender.
Yeah, sorry, keep going. Yeah, keep going.
No, I can't remember which defender it was, but he timed the ball perfectly, got it through the tiniest gap, and Huang finishes excellently. I mean, to make up that ground, I think Huang covers third, like, it's crazy how fast he gets up there. He's burning past Bernardo Silva. It's embarrassing. If you watch the replay again, he burns him. And it was just the only moment of quality that I saw from South Korea in the whole game. And it turns out to be the most valuable one.
And I was convinced we were going to get the VAR offside overturn.
Mm.
I had this, and to be fair, it's centimeters onside. It's just perfectly timed. And that did kick off the pure Luis Suarez dread scenario.
The message filters through, doesn't it? You can see the panic. You can see the resignation.
I don't know if you're on Twitter while you're doing this, but on Twitter, I've never seen so many people just posting the same exact thing. It was just 100 million memes of Suarez, or just pictures, forget memes, just pictures of Suarez burying his face in his hands, looking shocked, looking stunned. What did you make of the effort Uruguay made at the end? Because I think at that point they would have needed two, right? So
yes, they did.
Mm-hmm. And the irony
is, or if Ghana, you know, if Ghana scored, you know, their goal difference could have been better. Yeah,
right. You mean if yes, right. But so Uruguay winds up crashing out. I don't think it's any loss to the tournament. I think they are a team that absolutely should have had designs on going further,
mm-hmm.
and frankly, like they didn't approach the tournament with the appropriate desire to go win games and play football in a progressive way. I don't know. I mean, like, it's not that they're terrible, but they're
really not.
Yeah,
they're really not. If you look at their squad, they have some really good players in there, and I know that Cavani is on the way out. Suarez is definitely on the way out. You know, Godin, I don't know how that man is still playing for Uruguay. I think he's just going to be there when he's a skeleton. He's still going to be leading that back four. So, but, you know, Bentancur, good player. Valverde, good player. De Arrasqueta, good player. Pelistri, good player. Darwin Nunez, good player. They have enough attacking talent. And even in midfield, they had Lucas Torreira on the bench, Manuel Ugarte, who's been like one of the best players for Sporting this season, on the bench. I just felt like their reputation is so ingrained, not into just the footballing world of stereotypes, but also within themselves. They need to be a team that, in a kind of Atletico Madrid fashion, is at their best defending. You know, that's where they get their strength from. And in previous years, I would have said yes. But this year just felt like a massively wasted opportunity, because I did see enough talent. But for me, the manager wasn't brave enough. And even after the second game, there was a lot of fallout afterwards, where the players were going to do their post-match press conferences and saying, you know, ask the manager why we don't commit. And, you know, there was a lot of tension. And you could see in injury time today, the Uruguay manager was like, vamos, you know, like push forward. And it's like, you're waiting till the 91st minute when South Korea have scored. Yeah. To finally push your players up. And actually the injury time itself was brilliant. You know, there was penalty shouts, there was 5-on-4 attacking situations, there was tears on the touchline, there was surrounding the referee. Like, Cavani punched the VAR screen on the way down to the tunnel, and it was just like, it was brilliant. This was like pure carnage in 8 minutes.
It had
minutes,
everything. It had Ghana missing yet another penalty. It had Suarez wearing the armband, against Ghana. Had Ghana ultimately just being mean enough defensively to keep Uruguay out. Like, this is Pyrrhic victory for Ghana, right? It's they lose, and they don't lose even particularly well, but they lose just well enough that they take Uruguay with them, right?
Like, completely. Yeah. And actually, there was one particular chance that Kudus had, and the keeper made an excellent save. I mean, fingertips, and that's the difference, you know? I mean, obviously it didn't count in the end, but, you know, ultimately I think Ghana were just knackered and kind of resigned to the idea of going out. But to see Uruguay lose it like that at the end, I mean, you know, there would have been a few happy dressing rooms, I think, and Uruguay is not one of them. Ghana, certainly one of them. So,
we did get one vintage Thomas Partey moment where he dropped the shoulder on someone on the edge of the box and played a perfect pass through. Mm-hmm. That was nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought he was a bit, I don't know what the word, peripheral today.
Yeah.
Even when Ghana had the ball, I don't think he was at his best. I thought Kudus again was excellent. I thought Kamal Dean Sulemana made a really good impact when he came on in the second half. Look, for me, this game, right, it encapsulated the two teams and their current situations. You know, it was two sides at either extreme of the age curve who both had their moments, who both had quality, but couldn't find enough to qualify. For Ghana, it was kind of the start of their journey with a new young squad. For Uruguay, the end of, you know, kind of similar to Belgium, a golden generation that they couldn't achieve something with, but ultimately just not enough in the end. But in terms of what they both offered, I enjoyed watching Ghana a lot more than Uruguay in the group stages, that's for sure.
Yeah. Yep. Well said. So quickly, anything you want to say in praise of South Korea at all? I mean, you know, we tend to, I think, sometimes when teams surprisingly get through, focus on the team mm-hmm. that disappointingly crashed out,
mm-hmm.
In this case, Uruguay. And maybe not enough is said about the country that gets her. You know, we probably didn't give enough love to Australia, for example. Not that anyone would have told us that, you know, made that point in any way, shape, or form. I think you did a nice job giving Morocco their credit towards the tail end of the pod yesterday, which created the nice dynamic that people were angry tweeting me halfway through having listened to the pod and then apologizing at full
time. Had to get them in. I could envisage the tweets already.
It's the gift, not going to lie. You had us in the first half.
We have to keep people guessing, you know? Never let them know your next move. Yeah.
But so let's cut that off at the pass with a little love for South Korea.
Yeah. I mean, it's what I said. I thought today was actually their worst performance. I really enjoyed them in the other two games. Really, really smart, technical team with a lot of energy. And that seems to kind of be the trademark of the Asian teams. Maybe not so much Australia, who are focused on defensive stability and their shape and maybe snatching things down the other end. But I think Japan and South Korea have really shown a high technical level. And I really enjoy teams who can be brave enough to show that. I think Japan, you know, didn't show it to their best ability. I mean, they averaged incredibly low amounts of possession in the group stage. But yeah, I think South Korea have a lot of talent. And what I liked was they weren't just relying on Son every time. I think he felt an internal pressure to deliver, but I never felt like South Korea were constantly looking for him, which is I really liked. I think Hwang being back to fitness is a big boost for them because he gives them something different up front. I thought Kim Min-jae really impressed me. You know, at the back, he was injured today, but in general, he's had a really good start to the season with Napoli. So look, I think they've got talent and nobody expected them to get through, especially with their manager sitting in the stands. You know, it's a huge achievement, and you could see what it meant to not only them but their fans. I mean, that there was crying and, you know, all sorts happening, you know, in the stands. And I think it's just showing you that football is really capturing people all over the world, truly, because too often it's been a very Europe-centric knockout stage in the World Cup, mm-hmm. but now you're seeing teams from Africa, teams from Asia. You know, in a few years, you never know. USA, Canada, they have a plot to, obviously USA qualified now, but Canada could even have a role to play in 2026. And I think that's a really positive sign. And one that should really be sticking the middle finger up at FIFA, who want to add, you know, kind of more nonsense and disrupt this.
Yeah, it's sort of a shame because we're getting this really wonderful World Cup on the pitch, which I think FIFA desperately needed given some of the focus leading up to it. And here they wind mm-hmm. up getting the on-the-pitch World Cup they would have hoped to be getting. And now they're going to just tear the whole thing up and find another way to screw it up 4 years from now. But let's flip over to the other group. We came very, 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 very close. Very close. To having France, England, Spain, and Brazil in one half of the bracket.
Mm.
And I mean, first of all, if you're Lionel Messi and you're looking at Netherlands, USA, Australia, Japan, Croatia, Switzerland, South Korea, you love it. As a USA person myself, I was thinking, yeah, we're making the World Cup final. But that's not what happened. Now, Brazil is in our half of the bracket. Switzerland's in the other half of the bracket. So that changes that. But this, I really enjoyed these games. Actually, I think I enjoyed these games more than I did the earlier games, even though the finish was so fun in the earlier games. First of all, the Serbia-Switzerland game was just madness, totally mental. We'll come on to the Brazil game in a moment. And I want to talk about that because I think Martinelli was just fantastic. And, you know, Real Madrid were like, how fast can we fax over a bid?
maybe not fax, considering what happened with De Gea.
Yeah. To be fair, there might be a newer technology. I don't know. But let's just hang on Serbia, Switzerland. And like, what do you know? Again, similar to Uruguay, Serbia decide to play Vlahovic and Mitrovic together. And what do you know? Suddenly, Vlahovic and Mitrovic are scoring goals for them. Who would have guessed?
The big men do the goals, as we say. I mean, it took 24 seconds for the first kind of goal mouth scramble. And I thought, we're just not going to get any time to breathe here, are we? Because Serbia are such a funny team structurally, because they've taken Mikel Arteta's 5+5 formation and given it all the steroids. You know, they had three defenders, two holding midfielders, nobody in 40 yards, and then five attackers. And it was just incredible, because I think they finally leaned into their strength, which is their attack. You know, it was Filip Kostic, Vlahovic, Mitrovic, Tadic, all starting for the first time in this tournament. And as chaotic as they were defensively and in transition, you really saw them as an attacking outfit. You know, and Switzerland are no mugs. They defend well. But when you get people like Mitrovic, Vlahovic together, working together, pinning centre-backs back, and you have the service of Kostic and Tadic, goals happen. And we saw it firsthand.
Turns out, yep.
Yeah. Who would have thought? Who would have thought, huh?
Well, before that, the human thumb got a goal. Any words on him?
The human thumb plus a calf muscle. very good. Very good goal, actually, because I thought they'd missed the chance, because Serbia actually got some bodies back in front of the goal. But I think it was Gibril Sow showed a lot of intelligence and awareness in the box to just pass it off to Shaqiri, and he found the gap. And I was waiting for the celebration, but he seemed to keep a lid on it in that moment. But you could see the joy. You could see what it meant to them, and they all went screaming over into that corner. And I was like, that's what – it was already being played at a kind of frenetic tempo, but we just needed a little goal just to – you know, put another log on the fire, shall we say. And then you know, the goals started flowing.
Yeah, and I have to say, this is another one where you had to have the live standings up, because it was starting to get a little bit confusing. And so early on, Switzerland take the lead. They're on 6, and Brazil are on 7. But at the time, you know, you're looking at it and you're thinking this could get a little bit interesting. Then Serbia come back and get the 2 goals. Mm-hmm. Now Switzerland are on 3 and Serbia is on 4. Mm-hmm. So they're going through. But Cameroon suddenly are looking at this thing. If we can find a goal, we would go through. At least at that point, they would have gone through, because Serbia had the dreadful goal difference. So Serbia created a really interesting situation where Switzerland are out, but a goal away from being back in. Cameroon are a goal away from being in, and Serbia were in. And that was a really interesting dynamic in terms of the way Serbia played to get back into it. I thought what made this game so fun in a way is Serbia were, and maybe this is why they didn't play their 2 strikers. Maybe their coach knew how bad they suck defensively, because they were a mess defensively.
Yes,
and that just made for
mess.
This being a very fun game to watch, because Serbia had threat, but my goodness, they could not stop the ball movement and just interconnected play of Switzerland every time they got the ball.
Well, we saw it when they were chasing the game after conceding first. They were straight away back in control and making chances. I mean, the Mitrovic header, it's an unbelievable goal.
And it's so casual. He makes it look so easy. I love the aesthetics of that.
It's a brilliant header, and even Vlahovic's one, he takes it really well. I mean, I still don't know what his ceiling is, but he knows where the goal is, that's for sure. And, you know, they deserved it because they really started leaning into their wide players. And I just think get Kostic on the ball with those two massive lumps up front who like their elbows, who like to knee people, who like to be in at the near post. They would cause problems for anybody, you know? And I was really glad that they decided to lean into that. But then when they had to defend a bit, Switzerland just went up the other end and scored again. So a really nice goal again, actually. They worked it really well. The defending's horrible, I know. But, you know, they find Mbolo at the back post. And I think he's a really interesting player, Mbolo. Maybe not given enough respect in Germany at Mönchengladbach. Now he's at Monaco. I think a Premier League team should gamble on him because I think I see attributes there that would translate well.
Yeah, he sure looks impressive. I mean, it's hard, right? Because those really physically imposing players, the players that have athleticism and a you know, a big frame, they stand out, right? And so sometimes they catch your eye, but you know, they can also catch your eye in the way Lukaku caught your eye the other day.
So, yes, but I don't know. He's got a little bit about him. I think technically he's even played wide before, so you know, good player. I think this summer some Premier League teams should be looking at him. But yeah, then it's 2-2 at half time. What a goal! The third goal. What a move! I mean, it's beautiful. I mean, the back heel from Vargas, the awareness there is so good. And the little finish, the third man run from Freuler, lovely finish again into the corner. And it was just like the goals in this game.
That was a beautiful team goal. Just the perfect little, like it was sort of an Arsenal goal, you know, is the kind of goal you could picture Arsenal and their pomp scoring, or Arsenal even today.
Yeah. It was kind of similar to Mitrovic's goal against Cameroon, you know, when they just worked it from side to side, you know, really, really, really good. I think Switzerland are full of a lot of intelligent players who are very much the sum of their parts. You know, that's the strength, the collective, which I like about them. It's always been like that. You know, for as long as I can remember watching Switzerland, they've always been about the collective. And I think that's really admirable.
The way the game played out is crazy because so at that point, Switzerland's through. Mm-hmm. It's starting to look increasingly unlikely that Serbia can get through. But now it's not outside the realm of possibility that Switzerland can top the group. I mean, it seems unlikely because what are the odds that Cameroon's going to beat Brazil, right? Next to nothing, probably as close to zero as it gets. But if it happens, Switzerland have a chance. So the Switzerland-Serbia game took on a very, very weird kind of dynamic because both teams were still sort of going for it. And I think it was just pure straight hatred fueling it at the end. There
yeah,
was
those
so
last
much
20
aggro
minutes.
In this game. Talk me through it, Granit Xhaka having the ability to always be caught up in every conflict on the pitch and being able to somehow, like, I don't know when he looks like he's going to piss people off more, when he's actually in their face fighting them or when he does that smug smile afterward. he had his wind-up, like, merchant boots on today. He was absolutely driving Serbian players to the edge of their sanity.
I think he was playing a very important role and one that we've seen quite often for Arsenal this year. You know, it's growth, people. We're seeing growth right in front of our eyes, and he's become so good at treading the line but never overstepping. You know, I've never felt this season that he's overstepped the line, whereas in the past, we've seen it clearly happen. You know, his head goes, and that's
Do you think
that,
he would have overstepped the line? Because, Phil, I have to say, there were a couple moments. There was one sort of right behind the goal mouth where I saw madness in his eyes, and he looked enraged. And if his teammates don't, like, stop him, I was sort of curious if he had it under control. I think post-hoc, you can be like, oh, he always had it under control. He was winding them up. But he looked really on the edge in that particular moment.
I mean, this game has a certain emotional, you know, aspect for him. Mm-hmm. And it's a, you know, even from the Serbian side, there's a lot of animosity towards each other. I mean, nobody hid that. There was no effort to hide it. You know, Mitrovic and Xhaka were having words. Xhaka then had words with the Serbian bench, and then everyone got up, and it was always going to happen. I think, you know, we said it the other day, this was always going to happen. Tempers fray. When things are on the line, people start to get desperate. The adrenaline starts to go. But I don't know. I just always saw him, you know, there may have been a look in his eyes. There may have been some words said, but you know, I was never scared for him to take the extra step and really lose it, you know? And I thought he was extremely solid, played very well as he always does. But I just thought the role that he kind of took on was as captain, you know, I've got my story with you. I've got my history with you, but this is about my team. And he really kind of got them up when they needed to be up. And Switzerland qualify for another knockout stage. I mean, it's incredible, really. They keep doing it. This is a team of experience, of know-how, of quality when they need it. And I just think that's where Serbia couldn't match them. You know, defensively, they were a disaster, obviously, but I just think their ability to manage the game was non-existent. Whereas Switzerland have been here, they've done it, and they looked cool in the moments they needed to look cool. They could raise it when they needed to raise it. And I just think this is them. And I have a lot of time and respect for them.
Yeah, well, I want to get to the end of this. I want to get to the way the Cameroon game finished. I want to get to how Martinelli played in particular. Mm-hmm. I want to get to tomorrow because we got both England and the USA in action in round of 16, among others. But I also want to get to the fact that you got to try NordVPN. NordVPN gives you full creative freedom when it comes to the presentation of your internet, right? I mean, it is. Let's put it this way. If you want to watch the European coverage of the World Cup, you can change regions and watch it there. If you want to watch the American... No, probably not. Yeah, you get my point. If you want to watch some BBC Match of the Day stuff, you need to be in a certain region. Well, with Nord, you can change your region. You can watch the stuff you want to watch. You can view the things you want to view. You can hide your web browsing from your ISPs, from your providers. You can browse in complete security and safety, right? NordVPN keeps your information encrypted, so you never have to worry about your IP or location getting out. Nord's also doubled down on keeping you safe with their new threat protection feature. You can say goodbye to intrusive web ads and malware. Even if you download an infected file, threat protection kicks in and deletes it before it makes a mess of your computer. All right, so there's literally no risk. You get a 30-day money-back guarantee. Browse in the place you want to browse. You want to watch Netflix show that's not available in your region. I mean, we watch Bluey in our household. That was available in Australia before it was available in the US. NordVPN can make it possible. Keep you safe. Keep you browsing the content you want to view. And 30 days, absolutely risk-free. Give it a try, okay? Check out our link, nordvpn.com/arsenalvision. That's nordvpn.com/arsenalvision. You'll get a huge discount on a 2-year plan and a month free. So it's nordvpn.com/arsenalvision, 2-year plan and a month free. Discount on the 2-year plan and month free. Do it now. Phil, is that enough of that?
Indeed.
Yep. Nailed it. Not my best ever, but you know what? Like, they can't all be your best ever. So before we get to the Martinelli of it, Brazil, bang on the door. And then what do you know? Like one ball, just, you know, down the wing and across and a header, and what a header it is, and Cameroon win, and it's scenes. And actually, we had a few minutes there where if Switzerland could have scored again, they would have topped the group. Brazil would have finished second. Brazil made a lot of changes, and I'm sure the Brazil fans are going to blame all the Brazil players, but this seemed to be a case of just like a lot of goal mouth scrambles, a lot of chances, a lot of opportunities, not being able to completely, fully, totally put it in the back of the net. I will say their defense looked a little ropey, to be fair. It did look a little ropey at times. There were also some unbelievable saves at both ends, to be fair. Ederson made a sensational save in this game. So what's your sort of 30,000-foot view on Cameroon winning this? It's a great story, but is there with Brazil or not really?
No, I think, you know, there was 9 changes to the starting 11. It's normal to lack fluency, especially when you don't have too much time to prepare and train, you know. And even with those changes, even though they lost the game eventually, they were still dominant. I think on another day, they still score 2 or 3. But in general, I don't think under Chite, this Brazil side are vibrant attacking, you know, this relentless attacking force. You know, they're very well suited to international football, which is slower, a bit more reserved, defensively solid, and then hope for 1 or 2 moments where your attackers can shine. And one person who did shine, Gabriel Martinelli, I mean, he was man of the match by a considerable distance. The only person who looked to be running beyond, he was threatening, I mean, the poor right back, you know, he's going to need a some hugs later on, because he'll be shook up after that, because he was getting in every single time. And there's nothing fancy. There's nothing fancy to Martinelli. It's just head down and run. But Gareth Bale made a career out of that. So
there were some, there were some like really nice little tricky moments. Yeah. The other thing is like, he's really good in the air. And I thought his header, like, it's not an easy one to get to. He's stretching
it's a great
to
save.
Get there.
It's a great
it's a
save.
Really good, he mm-hmm. can't get it down. It's a mm-hmm. great save. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess you're, look, he's not, he doesn't have as much of a trick, but just his raw pace. Like, but he does have a trick in the sense when he gets to the byline, he has this thing where he can burst past you to the byline, mm-hmm. but has great close control to stop it from going out, right? And he likes to cut in a lot, and he has a good sense of when to switch it up, go to the byline, get past a man, but then he does have an ability to really tightrope the byline. We've seen him do it a lot for Arsenal and play the cutback, and I just think he provided a lot of good service. He had a lot of good threat in this game, just didn't happen to go in the net.
Yeah, I mean, he's very deceptive. Like you said, within close quarters, I think he's improved massively. And also his decision-making in general. He knows when to take on his man. He knows when to cut back. And I just think we're seeing a development, a progress really accelerate here. And look, whether it's enough to displace Vinicius Jr., I'm not sure, but he's certainly done his chances no harm. And it kept annoying me when Brazil kept going to the right. I mean, Fabinho was literally unable to look to his left. Every pass was going to Dani Alves and to Antony. Antony, by the way, was dreadful. Dreadful, dreadful, dreadful. He doesn't have a right foot. He doesn't have a burst of speed. Talented player, no doubt, but just comparing the two, there was, it was clear who was more effective. And I was just wishing that they would give it to Martinelli a bit more, but they kept going to Alves, they kept going to Antony, and it was... Yeah. Driving me crazy, but
Antony's hilarious. He reminds me of one of those like almost like a comedy routine thing where you do the a million step overs and then just like fall down or get the ball taken from you, or like, you know what it reminds me of? You ever see Indiana Jones, since there's a new Indiana Jones trailer coming out, where there's like the thing where the guy comes at him with a sword, but then he just shoots him? I feel like
right, okay, bringing a gun to a sword fight.
Yeah. Antony's like the sword fight guy with all the step overs, and then he just inevitably doesn't do anything with the ball.
He's a YouTube player, and I'm sure he'll do good things for United, but he's just massively skewed the market. Mm-hmm. And it's annoying because I think he's talented, but he just doesn't affect the games enough for me. And you know, that also goes on to another player who didn't really affect the game. And that's our Gabby, our other Gabby, Gabriel Jesus. I think first of all, I was really excited to watch him because I think, right, he's finally been given a chance from the start. But he got crunched really early on. I mean, it wasn't a foul, but it was a really heavy challenge. And then for the rest of the half, he was just limping around. I mean, he wasn't sprinting anywhere. And that's not the Jesus we know and we see for Arsenal. And he just seems to play within himself a lot for Brazil. And it's a shame because you can see the weight of the shirt. And, you know, a lot of that is trauma based on what happened in the last World Cup and obviously not wanting to feel like that again. But I feel like a lot of it is self-inflicted as well. I just think he becomes too hyper aware of what he's doing and should I be shooting here? Should I be passing? And the natural instincts of his game kind of desert him. And it's a huge shame because, you know, he can't hide his emotions. You see everything. His facial expressions are so emotive. And to see his shoulders down like that, his head's down, it's really
did he get
sad
booed when he was subbed off? Or did it sound
he didn't get bit? Booed, but I think you just saw him. He wanted to sprint off that pitch and get off there as quickly as possible. And the tide's turning again in Brazil. And it's a big shame because he deserves better than that. But ultimately, if you don't score, you know, that's what you're in the side to do. And Brazil don't do their center forward any favors because they're so isolated all the time. But he just needs one to go in off his ass or, you know, just
none of their center forwards have played well. I mean, Richarlison didn't play well, right? Like nobody's playing mm-hmm. that position well. Richarlison got a brace mm-hmm. and one of them was a brilliant finish, but I don't think he's impacted the games. Like it's, I agree with you. He also took a knock early in the game. He got fouled and I think his ankle got rolled a little bit or maybe stepped on.
Yeah, it was a big challenge.
Mm-hmm. At all. So I don't know. I mean, my worry here, Phil, is like I'd be thrilled if he doesn't play another minute in the World Cup. My worry is, what does it do? You know, I would have loved for him to get like a brace in this game. Fine, he doesn't have to play the rest of the tournament, but he can feel good. He contributed, get people off his back. Do you worry at all what it leads to psychologically?
A little bit, because I know how hard the last World Cup hit him, and then he kind of brought it back with an excellent Copa America when they won it a year later. But this just seems to be a huge monkey on his back, and I don't want him to come back to Arsenal where we have to rebuild him, you know, because I feel like we need him back and ready to go straight away because we've got a job on our hands, you know, and I don't want a hangover.
That's the thing. If he was coming back to like a fifth place Arsenal trying to claw their way into the Champions League, that'd be one thing. But don't you think it helps? Like, you come back and you're the man, you're beloved at a club that's top of the Premier League table. Like, isn't that the easiest way to shake it off and be like, you know what? Not that he's ever going to be able to say like, screw the Brazil national team, because that's just not in the DNA of this thing. But like, he's coming back to something really significant where he is really highly regarded, you know?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't doubt his professionalism at all. I think he's always going to be there to give 100% for Arsenal. It's just like you said, this phenomenon with the Brazilian national team is very strange. It's something that's unique to Brazil, maybe to Argentina as well, to an extent, where it's more important than your club, for sure, you know? And I think disappointing again in this jersey will affect him. And I just hope that later on this tournament, he has a chance to really, like I said, get that monkey off his back, because the longer this goes on, the worse it's going to be. But it's still early. It's still early, although you can see a small trend developing.
At the end of the day, they top the group, and it's no harm, no foul.
Special mention to Cameroon as well, just for a historic win. And I think Vincent Aboubakar with the best red card of the tournament. You know, the little handshake with the referee, the little wave to the fans. You know, that's going out in glory. Brilliant. So
I'll tell you though, Cameroon were taken. I'm shocked that they only finished it down to 10 men, because they were putting in late challenges. I mean, every time Brazil had anything that looked like a counter, they were going in from behind. They were really,
there was no subtlety to them.
No, dedicated to keeping a clean sheet. Yeah. But it's great. We've seen some really historic victories in this World Cup from teams that have gotten through unexpectedly and teams that didn't, but still go out on a high. So I think it's been a great component of what we've seen here, to your point about it not just being a Eurocentric World Cup. So tomorrow, the round of 16 kicks off with two titans against less favored nations, although I don't know if the Netherlands necessarily qualify as a titan per se. They will be the more favored team. Argentina certainly do qualify as a titan. And let's start with the USA-Netherlands game. The Netherlands has more talent. The USA will have Pulisic, by the way, I think is the latest news. The USA has arguably played the better football in this tournament, but the Netherlands have the players to obviously comfortably find victory in this game. But like, the LVG of it to me, the Louis van Gaal of it, means that it will be a close game, because I just don't see his teams really playing the kind of football to blow anybody out. So any surprises you expect from the Netherlands in terms of selection or approach to this game? What do you see? Because the USA is no longer the team that's going to be in their defensive third for 75% of the match. There is going to be some back and forth here. And I actually wonder if that plays into the Netherlands' hands a bit, you know, if there's space for a Gakpo or something like that.
I mean, yeah, first of all, it depends on whether the Netherlands go for a back three or a back four. I think they'll continue with a back three, you know, and their lanes of progression are kind of very simple. They're not a secret, you know, Van Dijk, Daley Blind, Frankie de Jong, and then it's down to Cody Gakpo really to create some magic up front. And I think obviously historically they are the favorites. But I haven't seen an incredible amount of promise from them. I just think Van Gaal's very kind of wedded to his style, to his possession. And they rely on moments, which I think, if you have the talent, is a worthy kind of strategy. But I look at this team and I don't see too much of it. You know, when Vincent Janssen can start for this team, there's a problem there. You know, even Steven Bergwijn is playing as a striker. He's not a striker. So It will be interesting to see whether he goes with Memphis or whether he tries to go with Gakpo and Bergwijn. I'm not sure. He's very prone to changing, chopping and changing, so we don't really know. But I think it's going to be three at the back. And for me, that can be a way in for the States, you know, because we've seen them excel in wide areas. I'm looking at Tim Weah here, who can really get in down that side. If Pulisic is back, that could be a way in. We saw Matthijs de Ligt really struggle against Ismail Assar. So if Pulisic stands him up and really gets running, there's potential for the States there. And I think in midfield, we've seen the US play really, really well. So, and also, am I wrong here in saying that they're the only team yet to concede a goal? Or is that right?
I mean,
I think that's right.
I think, yeah, we didn't concede against England, obviously.
Yeah.
We conceded against Wales. From open play, you mean?
Oh, yeah. So from open play.
Because we conceded a penalty against Wales.
Yeah, it was the penalty. Yeah. So from open play, and considering we kind of trashed their centre backs, that's not a bad going.
No, but I think that's a bit of a red herring, because I do think that the defence is the weak point. The thing that's going to be the question for me is who starts at centre forward? Will Berhalter roll the dice and do what I think is the smart thing and go with a more talented player, even at the expense of not having that target man? Will he go with an Aaronson? Will he bring in, he's not going to bring in Gio Reyna. Will he go with an Aaronson, you know, and say, I'd rather have my best players on the pitch and try to create goals however I can? Or is he going to stick with going with a lesser player to have a more natural center forward? I'm not a Josh Sargent guy. We'll just have to see what Berhalter does there. Do you have an opinion?
Is he fit? Is Josh Sargent fit?
That's also a question mark. I don't know. And is he going to try Haji Wright again? I mean, I actually think he did what I was going to say is I think he did okay against England. He didn't look so bad, at least for a while. But my goodness, the sub appearance he made in the Iran game was really not great. And to be fair, we're probably overemphasizing one moment of madness when he took the shot on his weaker foot in the deep in a stoppage time, which had us all pulling our hair out. But so I think it'll be a good game. Certainly the U.S. should be in it. There's no reason they shouldn't be. So we'll see. The other one is Argentina, Australia.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Australia have, I think, stunned a lot of people by making it this far. Argentina, it's just one of these situations where, I'm sorry, Argentina, if you want to be taken seriously as having a chance to win a World Cup, these are the games you have to get through, right? You just can't afford to drop points here. So drop points. You're not going to drop points. You would drop out. Still desperate for club football to come back. So I don't want to belittle what Australia did, right? Because they got out of a group that had, you know, a Denmark team that obviously massively disappointed, but a Tunisia team that was actually pretty good. They stunned a lot of people. And I think they deserve huge credit for it. But, you know, the one thing that I'll say about them is we did see them come up against France and lose 4-1. And they took the lead early, but they could not keep France out. Do you see this going a little bit more like their game against France, where just the gulf in quality tells? Or could they keep it tight like they did in their other two games and make it interesting?
I think there's definitely potential for them to keep it tight. We've seen them excel defensively. You know, very difficult to break down when they get it right. I think Harry Soutar has been one of the players of the group stage so far. An incredible story, you know. And in general, they're a very hardworking, conscientious team that have shown a willingness to capitalize on their, you know, few attacking moments. But I did see signs from Argentina against Poland that they were getting back to normal Argentina, you know. They were starting to look like a football team again with Enzo Fernandez back in the midfield. They had Julian Alvarez up front, movement, connections, smaller distances. And I think that's the formula they have to follow. I mean, for Scaloni to change it now would be madness, you know. And Messi looks to have found another gear, which is good. Maybe not from 12 yards, but in all other phases of play, he seems to have found another gear. So, and we saw them basically decimate Poland, who were playing in a similar style to what we expect Australia to be playing, you know, very defensive, trying to catch them on the break. So look, it would be an incredible, incredible upset for Australia to get through this. I mean, you can never say never. We've seen it, you know, the evidence has been there even in the last few days for us. but I would be stunned if Argentina don't get through. It might not be vintage Argentina. They might have to buy their time a bit, but I think they should have enough on the day to get through here.
Yeah, and I expect the same thing, but I will certainly be pulling for my friends in Australia. It'll be a fun day. Knockout football starts. If it's anything like the last few days we've had, it should be absolutely wild. And I'm looking forward to it. England get their turn on Sunday, and we'll preview that in our next episode. I do have something I have to read. It was sent to me on Discord by one of our patrons. I, Elliot Smith, would like to take this opportunity to apologize to the Irish nation. I was insensitive in yesterday's pod, and on reflection have concluded that there was no defense for Henry's behavior. He cheated, but not only that, it was an extension of FIFA conspiracy to rob Ireland of their inevitable first World Cup. I, too, am now complicit in this conspiracy. Sorry, Ireland. That about cover it, Phil?
I'm very glad they realized it was all you driving that conversation. I'm still a friend of Ireland. And I intend on staying that way. So
well, hopefully this gets me back in the good graces. Phil's on Twitter at _PhilCosta. Thank you, Phil Costa.
Thank you very much.
My name is Elliot Smith. Block me on Twitter, Yankee Gunner. Love you, everybody. Big day for USA tomorrow. Big day for our Australian listeners. And I guess, to be fair, to our Argentinian and Dutch listeners as well. Big days all around. It's another big day. We love you. We will talk to you after. My country 10, your country 0.